His Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Size Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, coming to you from the Radio Sai Studios in Prashanti Nilayam. Till a few moments ago, you were listening to this morning's Vedam and Bhajans that were coming to you live from the Sai Kulwanthal. It is exactly 42 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time, on Thursday morning, August the 4th, 2016. And you're tuned to Radio Sai's Asia Stream. The Mangal Aarti has just concluded in the Sai Kulwanthal, and the devotees are quietly lined up for the darshan of the holy Mahasannidhi as we speak. The ashram atmosphere is still reverberating with the sacred energy of the Vedam and the Bhajans, sung ever so melodiously by Baba students. It's a beautiful day here in Prashanti Nilayam. I'm sorry, I had a little difficulty with the music. It's really a very pleasant day here with comfortable temperatures, lows of 23 degrees Celsius, highs of 31 degrees Celsius, with the mix of sun and cloud, with more cloud than sun. Today on Morning Glory, we hope to offer you a peep into some of the wonderful ways in which the Sai message and Sai mission is making our world a better place. During the recent Guru Purnima celebrations, I was very fortunate. I had the opportunity to catch up with a number of very inspiring, learned and committed members of the Sai family from around the world. Among them, a psychologist from the U.S., Dr. Jack Feely. He holds a number of important positions within the Sri Satya Sai International Organization. And today, dear listeners, I will be playing for you my special conversation with Dr. Jack Feely that we recorded shortly after Guru Purnima 2016 celebrations. Now, this interview touches upon many topics of interest to us: the state of our world, the American elections that are coming up, the relevance of the Sai message to our situation, the silent and absolutely astounding humanitarian work that is being done by the Sri Satya Sai International Organization around the globe, and much more. I promise you that we can all stand to learn much from Dr. Jack Feely's wisdom, his insights, and most importantly, his humility. So, dear sisters and brothers, brace yourselves for the next hour and a quarter of Morning Glory and tune in to the vibe of Prashanti Nilayam, the seat of supreme beauty, ultimate truth, and all things auspicious. But first, I have a question for the listeners of Morning Glory. And the question is, can you name the very first bhajan that a 14-year-old Satya sang as he declared his avataric mission? I repeat my question. What was the very first bhajan that Baba sang as a teenager when he declared that he was a reincarnation of Shirdi Sai Baba? Email me your correct answers at karuna@radiosai.org, and please state your full name and location, that is the city and country from which you are participating. My email ID is, and I repeat, karuna@radiosai.org. That will be K for kite, ARUNA@RADIOSAI.org for org. I look forward to your wholehearted and enthusiastic participation. With that, I'm happy to play for you my recently recorded special conversation not to be mistaken or confused with Learning with Love, but this is a special conversation with Dr. Jack Feely of America. Have a listen, please. Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to a special conversation with Dr. Jack Feely, the National Council President for USA of the Sri Sathya Sai International Organization. My guest, Dr. Jack Feely, is also the co-chair for the International Disaster Relief Committee of the Sathya Sai International Organization. By profession, Dr. Feely is a psychologist. He began reading about Sai Baba in 1978, and he became an active member of the Sai organization as soon as he first went to Prashanthi Nilayam and met Swami in 1990. To learn more about Dr. Feely's journey to Swami and his many experiences and the impact of those experiences on his life, please visit our Learning with Love episode with Dr. Jack Feely. Today we will talk to him about some general topics. That is why this is a special conversation. Sairam, Dr. Feely, and welcome once again to Radio Sai.
Thank you, Karuna, and I'm so pleased and so honored to be here, especially during this wonderful time of Guru Purnima. It was just so exciting, and the love permeated the air.
You captured it so well, and also the energy. It was so vibrant.
Yes.
I think the World Youth Festival set the mood.
Oh, when I look at what they've done in those 3 days in the preparation of 6 months, I feel confidence in the world.
I know, and about the future.
Yes, exactly.
And that's what we hope to talk about today, because, you know, there are so many concerns in many people's minds right now, Dr. Feely, about the state of the world, whether it's politics, for example, in your country, with the election coming up in another 5 months' time, or just the general affair of the world, rise of terrorism, the disparity between the rich and the poor, the increasing growing poverty, crimes against women. It makes people very sad. Now, given your understanding of the human psyche as a psychologist, what are your thoughts about the state we are in? Because is this the dark before the dawn? Because we keep talking of the golden age, and yet news media headlines speak otherwise, or tend to suggest otherwise.
That's very true, that the media presents a totally dark, terrible picture of what's been going on in the world. And granted, there are some terrible things taking place.
Oh, for sure. It's not all exaggerated.
Yeah. You know, I'll describe something. This is several years ago. I was in a little study group. This was not a Sai study group. This was a group of teachers where my wife used to teach at this school. And they would read different things or watch a video and have a discussion. And I was interested, so they asked me, they said, I can join them if I want. And one video especially really struck me. It was a video of a men's retreat. A group of diverse men spent a weekend together. It was videotaped. And they talk about things that were personal and challenges and feelings and thoughts. And there was one vignette. It's a young black man and a young white man. And during the course of the conversation, the young white man, who was about 25, 26, he said, well, listen, I don't know what it's like to be black. I only know what it's like to be white. The young black man, the same age, said, no, you don't know what it's like to be white. You need me, a black man, in order to understand what it's like to be white. Which, and I thought that was so profound. We do need other people to help us understand ourselves and other races, other religions, other people of poverty, people of wealth. We think we understand. In psychology, there's a term that was outdated, so I won't even bring it up. But the idea there is that it's a myth that I understand what other people think, what other people feel, how they live their lives. The truth is we don't. We have to be part of them and connected to them. As you said before, there is a big gap in the USA and probably around the world between the rich and the poor, between those who have, those who don't have. And it seems like those who have, whether it's wealth or property,
or power,
they operate out of fear that they might lose it. The people who don't have much don't have that kind of fear because they've never attained it. Now they may, and I don't even think they're that jealous. In the United States, one time years ago, a Russian lady told me, said, I was curious when I came over here, it's different in Russia. If somebody wins a contest, everybody is happy for that person. Where I come from, if somebody wins a contest, we're all jealous that we didn't want that person. So there is a generous spirit, but more and more and more, there's so many people who have so much and so many more people who have so little. The other thing I want to, you know, about the negative news, negativity sells. Maybe a lot of the listeners know the term Ferguson. It's a place, it's near where I live in St. Louis. It's a small community, poor community. And a little over a year ago, there was an episode that made the international news. There was an incident where a white police officer shot and killed a young black person, man. And it was like dynamite erupting. And all this tension that was building up just exploded. And a friend of mine, a 60-year-old man, he's a black man who's a very sweet, gentle, loving man. He's a singer. He's very famous in St. Louis. He told me he went down there to Ferguson when some of the riots and there was a lot of animosity and the news people were there and there were some buildings who were caught on fire. And he said, so he brought his music down there and a couple of musicians with him. And he set up, he was going to sing uplifting songs just to calm down the crowd. And he did that, but he said a group of international reporters saw him. They rushed over with their cameras and their microphones, and they said, we'd like to interview you. He said, sure. They said, well, what do you think of all this fire and all this violence and all this racial tensions? You're a black man. What do you think about it? He said, well, I'll tell you one thing. What you don't know is two blocks over there, there's a group of people giving clean water and food to the people who have lost their homes. And one block over there, there's another group of people from different churches are sitting around. They let people come into their home, into their churches to sleep because they're afraid. There's another group over there doing wonderful singing songs with the children. And he said, you know what happened? I said, what? They turned their microphones off and they started leaving. I said, and I yelled to them, I said, you're not going to broadcast this, are you? They said, no, we're not going to. And they rushed over to some other people.
Because they were looking for sensation.
Exactly.
And very, inflammatory sound bites.
Yes. So there is a lot of good and there's a lot of bad, but there's so much good that the media doesn't pick up on it. You know, the reasons there's so much tension, besides the gap between those who have and those who don't have. I tell you, this is years ago when my wife was teaching the first grade, and it was in the inner city. It was a poor area. And a little girl was missing for a few days from class. And when she finally came back, my wife said, honey, I missed you so much. I tried to call you. I didn't know. I was worried about you, that you missed class. And she said, well, Mrs. Feely, my mother's boyfriend hurt her, and she was in the hospital, so I had to stay with my auntie. And this broke my wife's heart. But then the little girl looked up and said, you know, Mrs. Feely, I guess my mother's boyfriend forgot about the love in his heart, didn't he?
Mm.
Because that's what she's taught the children, and that's what happens to all of us, isn't it? We forget about the love in our hearts, and we get scared, we get angry.
And we hurt each other.
We hurt each other.
Whether through words or through physical violence.
You know, the USA is, I guess, if there's a major religion, it's Christianity. In fact, an Indian gentleman years ago at Prashanti said to me, you're from the USA, it's a Christian country. I said, well, I guess most people would say yes. He said, I've always been confused. I said, I know some Christians, they seem more devoted to Jesus than devoted to his teachings. And I thought, from that moment on, I thought, I want to be devoted, at least as devoted to Swami's teachings.
Yeah. After him.
There's always been a tension in Christianity between justice and mercy. In the Old Testament, justice was really important. They would say it's important to be good. Goodness is all important. We have to try to be good, but we're never going to be good enough because we're not good enough, but we have to try to be good. In the New Testament, when Jesus appeared in the scene, justice wasn't the main theme. Mercy was the main theme. And then I think Jesus brought love and mercy to the teachings, and then I think of what Sai Baba teaches us. Justice, sure, but love and mercy seems to overpower, trump justice, because I've heard people. I know somebody personally who had cancer, and Swami took him in the interview and rubbed his stomach and canceled it. So love can cancel so many other things. But we forget the love in our hearts, and somehow that's what we need to remember and hopefully teach other people through our behavior.
Very rightly said. I absolutely agree with what you're saying. But given the state of the world, we're finding that extremism is also on the rise in many segments, and people are peddling hate and extremism sometimes under the garb of religion, which is only a very poor marketing trick. And yet there are some very good intentioned yet confused young people who are falling for this sort of indoctrination that is happening, especially through the social media. And it's not limited to poor country where it's just the lure of the money or something, that a poor teenager might pack his bags and run away and join a secret group. It's even happening in countries like the US or parts of Europe, especially the UK. What are your thoughts on that? What is it that is making these youngsters so vulnerable, gullible, making them fall prey to this kind of an assault through the social media on their good senses?
So many of these young people who fall prey to this extremism or this indoctrination, they are good. They're good people. They're pure people. They're intelligent people. But I think there's, as I understand it, there's two major things in operation here. One, and you use the term marketing.
Yes.
Years ago, I was working in my office with a man. He was a salesman, and he was very successful. I think he sold big farm equipment, tractors, things like that. And in one part in our conversation, I said to him, I said, "You're very successful. You must be a very good salesman." He said, "I can sell anybody anything." I said, "Really? How do you do it?" He said, "All I have to do, if I can instill two emotions in a potential customer, I can sell them." I said, "What are those emotions?" He said, "Fear and greed." He said, "If I can convince somebody that unless you buy this product, unless you buy this service, I create fear that if you don't do it, then your neighbors are going to be more competitive, and your harvest is not going to be as big, as large, and you're going to lose. You're going to lose your home. You're going to lose your farm. That's fear." But then at the same time, he instills greed. "But if you do buy this product, if you do buy this service, not only will you become, your harvest will triple. You'll get all this money and prestige, and you can build another extension to your house. You can build another place to put your tractor." He said, "Fear and greed, because, first of all, fear sells quite a bit. There's a second thing." So I think the people who are trying to indoctrinate our young people around the world, they're teaching fear and they're teaching greed. But there's something else, and I think it's equally powerful. It's what we all need, a sense of belonging. And I think whether it's young people, middle-aged people, older people, if they don't feel a part of a community that loves them, whether they're accepted, then they get lost, and then they become even more vulnerable. Sometimes in my office as a clinician, I realize that the person I'm talking to, I don't have any magic solution necessarily, but I'm listening and I'm paying attention, and I'm respecting what they're saying. And I realize what they do is they feel a connection to me. And they feel like they belong in this moment with another person talking and listening. So it's that connection and that belonging that so many young people, I think, don't have and become vulnerable. And then if people come and market this fear and greed idea, it's almost like they get seduced.
I see. So somewhere, I think a lack of self-worth and belonging, and if especially the ones who are on the fringe, who feel out of the group, excluded in some ways.
In some ways, yes.
Yeah, they might be more vulnerable than others.
Even some of the young people we've read about in our country who would bring in a gun to a school, they were outsiders. They had friends, but even the friends were the outside group. And in every community, in every society, there are people who feel like they don't belong. And the thing is, if they feel like they don't belong, they convince themselves, "I don't want to belong." Much like if you take here's an analogy. You take a little boy. He's got his, in America, baseball is a big game. So let's say he's got his glove and he wants to play baseball with the bigger kids, but they said, oh, and he's real excited, but they said, no, you're too little. We don't want you to play. Well, what he says is, huh, I don't want to play with them anyway.
Mm.
He feels rejected, but he'll say, I don't want to play. So when people who feel like they're outsiders, they'll say, I don't want to be on the inside anyway.
That's some sort of a knee-jerk defense mechanism that we all fall back on.
Yes.
Now, you're a clinical psychologist, Dr. Feely, and you deal with a lot of people who come to you with hurts and aches and emotional trauma. How do you bring Sai Baba's teachings into your practice when you try to heal these people or help them? Because, you know, there are these quick fixes, like, you know, put everybody on many people on an antidepressant, Prozac or whatever, or deal with the whole person, recognizing their spiritual self as well.
You know, I think some people need medication, but most of the people on medication don't need to be on it, but they become dependent on it. There was a seminar recently in St. Louis, a psychologist, a lady. And she worked in hospice, which is she worked with people who were about to die. When, let's say, if some of the people had inoperable diseases or cancer that went through all the treatments, and they knew that within 6 months they're going to die. So the goal was not to cure, the goal was to comfort. So she worked with them because a lot of these people had fear, and they were scared, they were confused, they felt alone, they didn't have family, and so. And she did this for years. And she would ask them about their lives, but she always would ask, now that you know you're going to die and you know you're leaving this life, is there anything in your life you regret? And they would tell them. And over the years, she accumulated five major things that people seem to regret. And I think it's good for us who may have a lot of years in front of us to know what these five regrets are, so we can maybe avoid them.
Yes, sure.
And I'll sometimes bring this up because I just recently learned these five regrets, and I'll bring them up with people in my office. I don't use the word Sai Baba, and I don't even talk in terms, I don't use the word spiritual, but they are. One regret, people will say, I regret that I worked too much in my life, and I didn't get a chance to spend time with friends, with my children, with my family. I worked too much now. And I think how Swami has taught us, I think, to balance our lives. And when people who work too much, they work out of fear of losing their jobs, fear of not having enough money. What if the economy collapses? So they keep working, and by the time it's time to stop working, they're old and they're sick, and now these people are facing their death. Another regret that I think in terms of Swami's teachings, many people will say, I regret that I didn't express my feelings enough. And, you know, you can know that many of those people regret that they didn't express a feeling of love to their spouse, to their children, to their grandchildren, to their colleagues. And Swami tells us. He uses the word love a lot, doesn't he?
All the time. He calls us embodiments of love.
Yeah. Recently, I was at a dermatologist back home. There was something suspicious. He turned out it was nothing. But he said, he's in his 60s, and he just had a heart condition and was out of the office for several weeks. Then he looked healthy. He said, you know, being away and being close to something really serious with his heart condition, made me realize I don't have a lot of time left, and he was telling me, I regret that I don't tell people I love them as much as I wish. Then he looked at me and he said, Dr. Feely, I love you.
So sweet.
And it was so sweet. And then when I was leaving, I was at the counter and I saw him walking down the hall. I said, Doctor. He said, yes. I said, I love you too.
And it sounds like funny to us, but this is something we can do. I mean, I do not know why we are conditioned to not express our love for each other.
Exactly.
Yes.
Because it's easy, and when he said it to me, I felt good.
Mm, I can imagine.
There's a third thing, that one of the regrets. Mm. A lot of people say, regret that I lost touch with old friends, people I've known throughout my life. And to me, it's this connection that Swami tells us we're all one. When I think of the word one, I think of connection. Hmm. You and I are one, so you and I are connected. And right now we're talking about Swami and teachings. We're connected. So people who say they regret losing touch with old friends, they feel that lack of connection.
Mm-hmm.
One, a fourth thing, and this is not in the order of five, but the fourth said that a lot of people will say, I regret that I wasn't as authentic in my life as I could have been or I wished I would have been.
I wonder what they mean by not as authentic, my true self or express.
I think it's that if you look at, I don't know, if the exhibition that the young adults at the youth conference did, one of them was a whole area on, it was almost like a social media type thing. And they had several posters on an assessment that I use back at home when I work with corporate leaders. It's called the DISC, D-I-S-C. But what it does do, it takes 15 minutes to take the test, and it provides information about two things. Based on behavior, the me I present to the world and the me I really am.
Okay.
And this is part of what Swami tells us, you know. There's the you that you know, there's the you that other people know, and then
and
there's
the
real
you.
Okay. And as we move, I think that people, when they say, I wish I would have been more authentic, I believe they're talking about something they don't even realize they're talking about. I wish I knew the real me, because maybe as I'm approaching death, I'm becoming aware. The fifth, to me, is the most interesting, and it's the most simple in how they word it. They say, I regret that I didn't choose to be happier in my life.
Oh, I didn't choose happiness.
Yes, because, and the word was choice. I didn't choose to be happier. And I thought, I realize, if we anchor, as Swami teaches us, anchor our happiness to things, events in our world, we're going to sometimes be, you know, feel good, sometimes not. But happiness is a choice. When he tells us, be happy. I understand that as choose to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
There was a book I just read recently called When Breath Becomes Air, and it's written by a neurosurgeon. He's Indian, and he married an American girl, and he wrote this book. He was 35 years old. He was at the top of the game, brilliant. I think one parent was Hindu, one parent was Christian. He grew up more Christian, but he worked a lot. And at age 35, he was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And he does die. At the end of the book, he dies. But the book is written while after his diagnosis and as he's approaching his death. And to me, the main message in there, he said, I've realized I could have, you know, achieved all these awards. I've learned so much. I've operated and done wonderful things. But happiness is not the goal of life. He didn't say you could choose or not choose. He says happiness is not the goal of life. And many people think it is. Happiness is not the goal. He saw it at the end of his life. He realized the connections with his wife and the friends he had, the relationships. That was the most important thing. He wanted to live and do wonderful things, but he didn't. And he became more aware of what was really important in life. One of the books that the youth passed out to some of the delegates and some of the people at the youth festival, I was reading one of them the other day, and I came across this little piece where one of Swami's students was saying to Swami, Swami, I have trouble controlling my thoughts. How can I control my thoughts? And then Swami said, you can't totally control your thoughts, but you can distract your thoughts. Distract your thoughts to good things. You can't stop thinking something, but you can think something else, mm-hmm. something good. And as a psychologist, I'm what's called more of a cognitive behavioral psychologist, because I'll help people listen, understand what they're thinking. And our thoughts are either rational or irrational. But our thoughts create our feelings. For example, if I think somebody is going to hurt me, it's just a thought. It may not be true, it's just a thought. but it creates the feeling of fear. If I think somebody doesn't accept me, it's just a thought. It might create the feeling of being feeling rejected or lonely or poor self-esteem. So in this kind of psychology, psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral approach, people learn how to listen to their thoughts, determine whether they're rational or irrational, and then practice turning these irrational thoughts into rational thoughts. Well, I think in terms of what Swami would do, I think he does it to us. He takes those rational thoughts and become more spiritual. So we create joy within us. Even when terrible things happen around us, with Swami, he's teaching us that we are God, that we are divine, that we're all connected, that we are all good, that we're all loving, and that we are embodiments of love, and our hearts are filled with love. And if we focus our hearts on that, we become happy in spite of what happens around us.
This is a great insight that you have shared, and I find it very interesting. But what I would like to hear from you is, knowing what you know and knowing what you just explained to us, how does that translate into your interactions with your patients?
Well, one thing I do, as I said a bit ago, the first thing in my office, when I meet somebody for the first time, they don't know me, they might be uncomfortable, they don't trust me. I'm trustworthy, but I understand they don't trust me. So I get them to talk, and I want to listen to them, I want to understand them. And this takes time, but it also takes something that most people don't do to other people. I sit down, and I look at them in the eyes, and I say, tell me more, and I listen to them. And then when they say something, I say, tell me more about that. That was amazing, or that must have been pretty frightening, or that must have made you feel very lonely. So what I'm doing is I'm leaving myself, and I'm getting into their presence.
Mm-hmm. I see. Now, what I want to hear, I'm going to ask you is to tell me more about what the Satisai International Organization, because apart from being a clinical psychologist, you're also the National Council President for USA of the International Psy Organization. Dr. Feely, what are we doing to expand Swami's teachings to live cleaner and more wholesome lives in mainstream America?
Well, there's a lot of things that we're doing. And I think let me point out to this, we just had a General Assembly meeting of the zone chairs and the
I love the term General Assembly. United Nations.
Yes.
Okay. Who's on the Security Council?
So all the countries in the zones reported activities. And I reported a couple innovative activities that the Satisai International Organization is doing in the USA anyway. One thing, you know, years ago we had public meetings, and they had the same formula. There were two speakers, and there was a video of Swami, and we tried to invite non-devotees to come in. And it was nice. I think it was better for the devotees than for the non-devotees, because I didn't see any impact in non-devotees, but I know the devotees had a good time. Well, recently in Detroit, in the USA, there was a different kind of public meeting. It wasn't just one time. It was three evenings in a row.
Okay.
And actually, the person who put it on was not even from the USA. It's Leonardo Glitter.
Okay. From Argentina.
Yes, from Argentina, and he's a psychologist. So maybe one thing, there were three different nights, three different venues, so three different locations, and the topic of all three talks were different. There wasn't a film. He'd never mentioned Sai Baba. There's nothing spiritual. But the topics, he called it the Good Life series. The first topic was finding goodness. The next night in a different location, the topic was share and serve to change you and your world. But the third topic I liked the best. How can we ease fear and stress? Now, there were a lot of devotees who went to all three. The first two, it was mainly devotees. The second, a lot of non-devotees came to that because I think they were interested in how to ease fear and stress.
That's the third one in the series.
Exactly. And what he was doing, he was just talking about the teachings of Sai Baba. Because it does ease fear. It does ease stress. So this is one thing that if we can get the message of the teachings, not so much about Sai Baba. But Sai Baba in the early 90s, I think, was talking to a group of editors, and he said, you know, I want you to spread my message. You don't have to spread the name or the form. Spread the teachings. Spread the message. There's another example of something is done in Texas, the state of Texas, in two different cities, Dallas and Houston. They've done this for a couple of years. Every summer, they go to poor communities and help them set up with what they call Sai gardens. These are community gardens where they go into a house and they might have a little plot of ground, a backyard, and they help them set up a garden to produce vegetables. They bring in the soil and bring in the fertilizer and teach the family how to nurture the garden and water it just right. And they've done this summer to over 60 homes, different homes. And so number one, the people get to feel pride in their garden, and that extends to pride in their community and neighborhood. And then second of all, they're eating fresh, nutritious produce, because a lot of the people, they go to what's called quick shops because there aren't a lot of big grocery stores in the inner cities, and they get processed food, fast food, yes. So they get to experience healthy food. And the third thing, and this expands beyond that, this year over 1,000 pounds of produce that they had extra.
Hmm.
And they donated to food pantries in their own neighborhoods.
How nice is
Isn't
that?
Isn't that beautiful?
Just to initiate someone so lovingly into sharing as well.
Exactly. And so in this community, for the second time in a row, the people who work the Sai Gardens, the team, they were invited to set up a booth at a Go Green community event. And there they taught people how to develop their own community gardens. A third thing that I saw, I reported to the General Assembly, this happened in Northern California. The young adults did this. They put out a retreat. It was called a unity retreat. Now, this is just for them. But what they did, they invited different people, of a Muslim, a Buddhist, of different faiths, to come in and teach them about these other faiths. The idea was that we need to know the differences before we can really see the unity. And so let's say after that, this retreat, my guess is that to them, most of them are all Sai devotees, young adult devotees, and most of the majority were Indian descent, so they knew a lot about Hinduism and Swami's teachings. But now they don't feel so alien to go into a Jewish temple. Can I come in and be part of this, watch the service, or to go into a Catholic mass, or to go into a Buddhist meditation? Because they know more, and that's something, it's their learning, but they're also giving as a result. They're giving their presence, and they're going out and being present with other people of different faiths. You know, ultimately, I think, you know, what can we all do? I think Swami said it very clearly when he said, your life is my message. It's how we live our lives. And that has to be authentic. If I'm living my life in trying to adhere to the teachings, and if I'm authentic, I don't care that people notice, but they probably will. Because if you walk in and you smile at somebody and you're exuding love, I think people do notice that, and they respond.
And you know, when we die, we won't have the regret that many people
exactly.
have. I wasn't as authentic as I could have been.
Exactly.
So I think it's worth it. Worth
it
taking the risk.
Yeah.
It's a risk worth taking.
Yeah.
Dr. Feely, you're also the co-chair of the International Disaster Relief Committee of the Sathya Sai International Organization. And from time to time, we receive a lot of reports of amazing work being done in many troubled spots around the world which have been hit by natural disasters. What can you tell us about this work?
Well, we've had the most recent disasters just 3 months ago in Ecuador in South America. It was an earthquake magnitude of 7.8 in April, just 3 months ago.
Devastating.
700 people died.
Oh,
and
my God.
Tens of thousands of people lost their homes. So the Sathya Sai International Organization immediately sent two members of the Disaster Relief Committee down there. And they spent a week down there doing an exploratory mission down there. But they also took advantage of setting up a small medical camp. And then they came back, gave a report, and they were able to diagnose the situation. What happened, the Sai school down there in Ecuador was damaged a lot. In fact, some teachers and students, they lost their homes. So we got this report. And the school, by the way, became, for the community, the focal point for other supplies and people to congregate because they just opened the doors. So what we're doing, we're having we sent supplies, water purification systems, sent supplies, tents. Immediately, there's some other NGOs, non-government organizations. But what happens, they come in, they do some things for a while, and they leave. Southeast Asia International Organization, we get in there quicker because we don't have a bureaucracy and we stay a lot longer. So on September 10th, we're having our first major medical, camp. And another medical camp will be early October. So we're going to set up some medical camps. We don't need to do what we did in the Philippines and some other areas, set up cooking food and distributing it, because they've got enough of that. And saying the people are doing okay, but we're also going to be, the SSIO is building, probably going to build 10 buildings. We're going to supply, they're going to do the work and the material there. We're going to supply the expense for the materials. And this, we're going to focus in the beginning on the teachers who have lost their homes and for the students whose families have lost their homes.
What a nice gesture.
Yeah.
So caring.
Another disaster took place almost a day before, was in April, 3 months ago, Japan. It was another earthquake, a magnitude 7.0. Now, 50 people died, but tens of thousands have lost a lot of their homes. And the Southeast Asia International Organization of Japan immediately swept in and started setting up tents and bringing water and food. They immediately, and they said, we've got this covered now, because, you know, we'll let the main organization know if they need any funds or any help. But right now they've got it covered because they started right away. You know, we all know about Nepal a year ago,
yes.
The disaster there.
Devastating earthquake.
Oh, so devastating. Well, there are, I think there are well over 100 centers, maybe 200 centers in Kathmandu has a lot of devotees and a lot of centers and doctors, and even doctors from India were able to come by truck immediately. And so they came in. We also, Southeast Asia International Organization, shipped tents and water and food and water purification systems. That was very important, the water purification. And we've set up a lot of work there. We're building, there was some work was delayed because there was an embargo and some political things going on. That seemed to remedy itself. So now this long-term construction and some other things. Fiji, in February of this year, Fiji had a cyclone, Winston. It's a major cyclone. In fact, the winds were recorded. Never have winds been recorded in that area as strong as this cyclone. But the Southeast Asia International Organization in Australia, in Zone 3, they're taking care of that. They shipped in. So they're able to do some things NGOs can't do because we're not a bureaucracy. The Philippines, which was, 2.5 years ago. In fact, when I was here before talking to you, I talked because all of us on the committee actually spent time in the Philippines, which was a beautiful experience. And they're doing really well. They're rebuilding. We've constructed 3 classrooms of one of the schools that was devastated. We've did some water for purification systems. We set that up. We're doing some buildings. But Zone 4 in Indonesia and Philippines, what they did, the international organization started to back out because the disaster recovery was pretty much done. It's now long-term rebuilding. So Zone 4 Indonesia, they set up a clinic, a maternity clinic and a general clinic. And they supply the doctors, they supply all the funds, they supply the medications, because a lot of the people, they wouldn't have any access to the hospital, it's too far away. But they've got a clinic, and it's called the Sai Clinic.
Sai Gardens, Sai Clinics, what a network of human goodness.
Isn't it? Yes.
It's amazing. It's a very vast canvas. Just to grasp it, everywhere there are these pockets of peaks of human excellence and goodness that are shining through because of Swami.
And people all over the world actually can read. There's two vehicles they can read about it. They can go to the website, which is SathyaSaiHumanitarianRelief.org, and get even more pictures and photographs of all the relief efforts, of all the disasters that have taken place. And also, go to the SathyaSai.org, and then there's Sai Universe, and they usually do.
They have reports of all the
reports, and they put out bulletins right away. In fact, in the Philippines, one of the things that took place, even though the SathyaSai International Organization began to back out, while the zone there in the Philippines in Indonesia was building their clinic, but there was a little boy. His name was Jaden. He's 2 years old, and he had a heart condition, a serious heart condition. He actually had a hole in his heart. And the Sai devotees, they went above and beyond because Jaden seemed to tug at their hearts.
Oh.
And so what they did, they said, we cannot just leave. So what they did on their own, they got some funds together and they arranged for Jaden and his mother to be flown to Manila to the heart hospital, and that they went through the test and they arranged that he was going to have surgery, and he went through the surgery. And I just found out from Dr. Ravi from Indonesia that the operation was successful.
Oh,
so Jaden, yes.
Little Jaden.
Yeah.
What a heartwarming story.
Yeah.
It must be so gratifying to coordinate this and see it come to fruition on the ground for you.
It is. It's because, we've got an operations manual. We have to continue to update it. But there's things that a lot of people, not just physicians, can do. In Ecuador, I think it's just going to be just physicians. And language is a problem. But because they don't need people to cook for them, we're not going to do anything there. But when disasters take place, there's going to be opportunities for not just physicians, but for other devotees to come and cook and take care of the children.
Haiti also, we were there for a long time.
Haiti, a long time, over 5 years, yes. Yes.
And so many different teams went and served those people and came back.
Yeah. And the interesting thing, I may have even mentioned this last time, but when I was in the Philippines with this team from the UK, most of them were Sai devotees, but one was a Buddhist, didn't know anything about Sai Baba. Three were Muslim, who didn't know anything about Sai Baba. And every morning I'd take a walk with this Muslim doctor. We would, before we hop in the trucks and go to the next camp, take a walk down to the water where the typhoon came in for exercise. And we talk, and I asked him one day, we're talking, I said, you're Muslim. You don't know anything about Sai Baba. Why did you come here? And he said to me, that's a good question, Jack. I don't know why I came here, but I do know this. I'm glad I came here. And by the end of that trip, he was saying Sai Ram to everybody.
Such is the impact of doing something together, that shared responsibility in the name of God when we reach out to another person.
Yes, yes.
And you gave that example at the start of this conversation where the young black man told the young white man that you need me to understand who you are.
Exactly.
And all of us need to see such human tragedies and natural disasters to understand who we are and what our purpose is on earth. Unless we reach out and do something for another person.
Exactly.
How can we just live this selfish life, self-absorbed in our own indulgences and wallowing in self-pity, comparing ourselves to others?
Oh, yeah. Or if we barricade ourselves up into just people like us and we never venture out, then we get scared of what's out there.
Yes. And when we have fear, we develop all kinds of negative emotions.
Not just negative emotions, but physical ailments too.
Yeah, which manifest as
exactly.
Physical ailments.
Yeah.
Very rightly said.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Feely, it's been quite a moment for me to get this update from you and your perspective on the state of the world's affairs, as well as on the wonderful, amazing work that Baba's devotees around the world are doing under the auspices of the SSIO. I thank you for your time.
Well, I thank you for inviting me, and this has been an honor, and it's helped me reminisce and go back, and every time I give a talk, it reminds me of what's important, because I go through Swami's lessons, and then I get refreshed and energized and uplifted also. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, and Sai Ram, sir.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. We are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India on this fourth day of August 2016. The time in our studios right now is exactly 31 minutes past 10 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. You just heard a special conversation with Dr. Jack Feely, which was recorded recently on July the 20th, 2016. I hope you enjoyed it. Please share your thoughts, comments and suggestions regarding this interview or any other Radio Sai programs with us by email. You can conveniently reach us at listener@radiosai.org. I'd also like to take a moment to invite you to enjoy another interview with Dr. Jack Feely from our repository under the series Learning with Love. This interview is very inspiring and it's a moving account of Dr. Feely's journey to Swami and how each of his experiences taught him life lessons. I do hope you will take a moment to download that Learning with Love interview with Dr. Jack Feely. That is F-E-E-L-Y. That is the correct spelling that you need to put in the search box. Dr. Jack, J-A-C-K, Feely, F-E-E-L-Y. And you can download it and listen to it at your leisure. Now with that, I'm very happy to announce the answer to this morning's question for our listeners. Namely, which was the first bhajan that a young Satya sang to herald his avataric mission? The correct answer, of course, is Manas Bhajare Guru Charanam. And the following long list of listeners got the answer right. I am super pleased to read out all the names, starting with Brother Ajay Rajan of Chennai, India. Congratulations, Ajay. Brother U. Sai Krishna from Hyderabad, India, a Sai University alumnus and a Radio Sai regular. Sister Sai Sudha of Mumbai, India, also a Sai University alumna and a Radio Sai regular. Congratulations to both of you. Sister Sunita Menon, I'm guessing because she's a regular from Bahrain, she didn't write, but I think Sunita Menon lives in Bahrain. Devraj, Mr. Brother Devraj from Dubai. Brother Ravi Ranganathan from Singapore. Sister Nalina Kumar from Edmonton, Canada. Bonjour, Nalina. Nice to hear from you. Sister Raji Venkat from Mumbai, India. Sister Kritika Ravi from also Mumbai, India. It's nice to know people in India's financial capital are listening to Radio Sai. Heartwarming. Mridula Murthy. Sister Mridula Murthy is from Bangalore, Karnataka, India. Brother Bala from Bahrain. Brother Satya Narayanan from Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates. Sister Geeta Sundar from Madurai in Tamil Nadu, India. Sister Rekha Loknath from Mysore, Karnataka, India. A brother, I don't know whether it's a sister or a brother or a combined name, Naveen Ramya. So I think Brother Naveen Ramya, thank you for participating. Sister Suhana Patel from Johannesburg, South Africa. Usha Kaundinya from Navi Mumbai, India. Mangal, Shiv, Poonam, Shaila and Sameer from Mumbai. Wow, thank you. It's nice to know the whole family is listening. Jay Lakshmi Venkatsami from Durban, South Africa. Thank you. Sister Jayashri Rangarajan from Madurai, India. Sister Meghal Solanki from Indore, Madhya Pradesh. Sister Lata Ramachandran from Jamnagar, Gujarat. And thank you for your kind comments, Sister Lata. And finally, Brother Pratap Makodia from Bhavnagar, Gujarat. A big thank you to all our participants and many of you have sent greetings to Team Radio Sai. I will gladly share it on our Google group with my colleagues. Thank you for your appreciation of Radio Sai. It's all Swami's grace. And aren't we ever delighted to have you as our partners. Radio Sai would be nothing if no one heard it, right? So listeners are very important to us. With that, dear brothers and sisters, I urge you to take a moment to enjoy that historic bhajan, Manas Bhajare Guru Charnam, in the voice of the Purna Avatar, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Incidentally, we can also remind ourselves that the same voice that we are about to hear is the exact voice that spiritual aspirants heard as the Vedas thousands of years ago after much intense spiritual discipline. The power that is described as that or tat in the Vedam assumed the human form of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba to bring us all back to where we belong, a space that is free of fear and hate and full only of selfless love. Dear listeners, it is now time to bliss out with these select bhajans in the voice of our beloved Bhagwan. Till we meet again on Morning Glory next Thursday, I wish you well. May Swami bless you profusely along with all of us here in Team Radio Sai. So please enjoy this musical treat in the voice of our beloved Sai, who is also the voice, the heart, and the soul of Radio Sai. Jai Sai Ram, and have a listen, please.
Manas bhajre guru charanam, Pushtara bhama sagar charanam.
Manas bhajre guru charanam, Pushtara bhama sagar charanam.
Manas bhajre guru charanam, Pushtara bhama sagar charanam.
Manas bhajre
Guru Maharaj. बड़ा चित चोरा वृंदावन संचारा बड़ा चित बड़ा चित चोरा वृंदावन संचारा बड़ा चित गोपाल गोपाल हे मुरली गोपाल 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 हे मुरली गोपाल गोपाल गोवर्धनोद्धार गोपाल बाला गोपी मनोहर राधे गोपाला गोपी मनोहर राधे गोपाला बड़ा चित चोरा वृंदावन संचारा बड़ा चित चोरा वृंदावन संचारा गोपाला गोपाला हे मुरली गोपाला 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 हे मुरली गोपाला गोवर्धनोद्धार गोपाल बाला गोपी मनोहर राधे गोपाला बड़ा चित चोरा वृंदावन संचार गोपाला गोपाला हे मु भज गोविंदम भज गोविंदम भज गोविंदम भज गोविंदम
भज गोविंदम
गोविंदम भज मूढ़मते गोविंदम भज मूढ़मते भज गोविंदम भज गोविंदम गोविंदम भज संप्राप्ते सन्निहिते काले संप्राप्ते सन्निहिते काले नहि नहि रक्षति दुःखकरणे रक्षति दुःखकरणे पुनरपि जननम् पुनरपि मरणम् पुनरपि जननम् पुनरपि मरणम् पुनरपि जननी जठरे शयनम् इह संसारे बहु दुःखाले इह संसारे बहु दुःखाले संसारे बहु दुष्टारे
संसारे बहु दुष्टारे
कृपया पारे पाहि मुरारे
कृपया पारे पाहि मुरारे
భజ గోవిందం భజ గోవిందం భజ గోవిందం భజ గోవిందం మూఢమతే భజ భజ గోవిందం భజ గోవిందం భజ గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే సంప్రాప్తే సన్నిహితే కాలే నకి నకి రచతి దుఃఖం కరణే నకి నకి రచతి దుఃఖం కరణే భజ గోవిందం భజ గోవిందం భజ గోవిందం గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే సంప్రాప్తే సన్నిహితే కాలే నకి నకి రచతి దుఃఖం కరణే నకి నకి రచతి దుఃఖం కరణే భజ గోవిందం భజ గోవిందం గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే
భవ భయహరణ వందిత చరణ భవ భయహరణ వందిత చరణ జయ రాధ జయ మాధవ చౌరీ జయ రాధ జయ రాధ జయ మాధవ చౌరీ జయ మంగళ చరణ కలిమల దహన చరణ కలిమల దహన నారాయణ కేశవ నారాయణ కేశవ జయ మాధవ చౌరీ జయ జయ రాధ జయ మాధవ చౌరీ జయ భవ భయ హరణ పండిత చరణ భవ భయ హరణ పండిత చరణ జయ రాధ జయ మాధవ చౌరీ జయ రాధ జయ మాధవ జయ రాధ జయ మాధవ చౌరీ జయ మంగళ చరణ కలిమల దహన చరణ కలిమల దహన నారాయణ కేశవ శ్రీమన్నారాయణ కేశవ Thank you. charana jay radha jay madhava
chitta chora yesoda ke ba navaneet chora gopa
chitta chora yesoda ke ba navaneet chora gopa
chitta chora yesoda ke ba navaneet chora gopa
chitta chora yesoda ke ba
Govinda, 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 Govin
సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం షణ్ముఖనాథ సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం 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 షణ్ముఖనాథ సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం 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 షణ్ముఖనాథ సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం 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 షణ్ముఖనాథ సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం శివ 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 సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం హర 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 సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం ఓం శివ 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 సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం హర 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 సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం
శివ 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 సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం
శివ 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 సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం హర 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 హర.